From Studio 22, you're listening to Servcast with your hosts William Lamb and Tyler Shores. Servcast is dedicated to challenging those who have a desire to serve, lead, and make the world a better place through the love of Jesus Christ. And now, here's William and Tyler.
Hey, welcome back. This is part two of our conversation on senior care and the cultivation of intergenerational relationships. Man, we got to figure out how to shorten that. That's something else. But
so that title?
Yeah. Well, that's just too much, right?
You came up with it, right?
Well, I studied theology, and we just have a tendency to complicate things. But okay, so William,
well said.
So this part two. So if you haven't listened to part one of this conversation yet, go back and listen to the perspectives from the student leaders from the On Campus Club Adopt a Grandparent. They're doing incredible work, and you really need to hear those stories. But William, so we're young to this this podcast game, right?
Yeah.
Relatively. So what, we have 13 episodes?
13, 14.
This will be 15 because it's part two of this extended conversation.
Right.
But, I mean, I'm not sure if insulting the guests is the best way to go about it. So you call them old, man, in the middle of an interview. Like, what are you doing?
Well, I guess if you want to know why, I could call our guest, who is Beecher Hunter, by the way.
Beecher Hunter.
Old.
The man that you called old.
You'll have to listen because,
to his face.
Yeah. And he smiled.
He did.
He is so much full of grace. And so it's awesome, man. It is awesome. What about these stories? Man, it was powerful, the stories that the students just shared. And we'll get to Beecher in just a minute, and we'll go live with his voice on this podcast. But before we do that, let's talk just briefly about the stories. And man, bingo seems to be the happening gig, right?
Bingo is the happening gig. So, again, like we heard stories of like people getting intensely competitive. And I'm telling you, man, that's going to be me. I'm going to be the one that I don't get bingo, someone else wins, and I flip over a table if I'm still capable of doing that.
That's funny.
By that time. But yeah, those are excellent. And honestly, like sitting down with these students, this is some of the best work we get to do, man. When we sit down, we hear their perspectives, but like we get to hear about their passions and the incredible things they're doing and the way even they challenge us, you know?
And I think one of the most exciting things for me is, you know, being able to actually see a student that has, you know, given this idea, they're going to do something, the same type of service for a couple of semesters, but then they stick with this for 4, 5, 6, in Jared's case, 7 semesters. I mean, wow, what happens to a student to make them want to do that?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we just tap into, okay, so you say you're made for more all the time. And I think that students who do that have tapped into that extra, the more that you say that they're made for, that we believe they're made for. And I think that just, there's just some kind of deep passion that you just can't maybe describe. And maybe at times it's hard to put your finger on, but I think these students like Jared have put their finger on that and just really go the extra mile. And I think they're one of the many service clubs we have on campus. And there are some, man, that are like 30, 40 years old. Like, students have been doing this for a really long time, which is amazing, because at most you have an undergraduate here for 5 years, maybe. So just the way that these students like Jared and the ones that were with him are able to perpetuate this work is a marvel.
And, you know, obviously our listeners can't, you know, visualize the facial expressions and the emotionalism that was even coming up from the students as they were telling their stories. But, man, so powerful, because they actually are not just talking about something that's abstract or something that is another person's story. These are stories that are very personal to them. These are people that they've actually had to say goodbye to some of their adopted grandparents who have, you know, passed on into eternity. Yeah. And but yet it didn't sideline them. It didn't stop them from continuing this compassionate care that they were doing. And I think that's the beauty of what this whole call to service is about, is that you become challenged, you experience the highs and the lows of it, you know, and then yet you continue to hone it out and continue to go forward with it. You're going to hear in this interview with Beecher Hunter, by the way, Beecher Hunter is our guest coming up shortly. He's the president of Life Care Centers of America. But the reason I could call him old is because he's my friend. And you'll hear about that in that interview. But one of the most exciting things for me in this whole idea is that these students are beginning to catch vision.
Yeah.
They're beginning to see that there's something out there beyond that immediate, what's obvious, and even better, what seems to be easy. You know, it's not easy to continue going back to an elderly care facility or a senior care facility on a regular basis, because sometimes you just feel helpless or really don't know what to do or what to contribute. Gary Riggins often talks about the, you know, showing up and shutting up principle. You know, sometimes just being there matters. And I think that, you know, the years that I've been involved in watching this whole service learning program emerge and the idea of, you know, students doing continual caregiving to somebody else, one of the most amazing things is consistency really matters, and showing up makes a big difference. And I think the story's told that. Beecher is going to tell that shortly. And so I'm just excited about what we're hearing in this process of this partnership.
Yeah, it was a real honor to sit in the room, to meet Mr. Hunter, and to sit in the room and listen to your conversation, listen to his kind of his heart for senior care. And this guy, like you said going in, like this, you say this about people, and that's one of the best compliments you give. Like you say, oh, this guy or this girl, like she's the real deal. And I think Mr. Hunter is definitely the real deal. And I'm really excited about this interview, and that's coming up next.
Hey, I'm glad to be back at ServCast, and here's my friend Beecher Hunter. Hey, Beecher, how are you?
Well, I'm just fine and dandy, and I'm happy to be here with you and talk about one of my favorite subjects, and that is senior care.
Now, we have been on this trek of caring for seniors for a very long time, you much longer than me, right?
About 30 years.
Well, you're probably one of the coolest old people I know. Is it okay to call you old, Beecher, probably?
I fit in that senior category, that's
somewhere
for sure.
There,
and
yeah.
My hair reflects that as well. So.
It does. And I hopefully when I get to be as old as you, Beecher, or at your age, I will have been a statesman like you and an advocate for people who need care. And so we want to talk about that today on ServCast and what does it really mean to care for the elderly in our world. So let me ask you this first question. What is the culture or the climate of long-term senior care in America?
Well, let me say, first of all, in a general kind of way, that for years, people in the country thought about elderly people would be people who eventually needed an old folks home. Sometimes it was called a county farm. And so from the beginning, nursing homes did not have a very good estimation in the eyes of the public. They were a place where people were sometimes thought to be warehoused to wait until they died. Mm. Forrest Preston had a lot to do with changing that concept. He was traveling the country as a salesman for a company that he and his brother owned in the late 1950s, early 1960s. And as he would visit hospitals, once in a while he'd be in a nursing home either owned by the hospital or with which the hospital had an affiliation. He was very disturbed at some of the conditions he saw, thought they ought to be better than that. Finally decided, well, if anybody's going to do anything about it, maybe it ought to be me. So talked to a college classmate of his named Farrell Jones about starting a nursing home here in Cleveland, Tennessee. And so on January the 4th, 1970, Garden Terrace Convalescence Center, it was called then, opened its doors. And it was a different kind of vision for people. He believed that if you develop a beautiful building, make it highly functional for patient care, staff it with people who are professional in the services they offer, but who do so in a spirit of love and compassion, you can have a successful nursing facility. Mm-hmm. And he believed if you can have one building operating according to that formula, you can go somewhere else and repeat the process and have two successful facilities. But he believed from the beginning that a nursing center ought to be decorated but home-like, so that residents would feel at home. So when that building opened, it really was the Ritz-Carlton of long-term care of its day. And so that same vision has continued to function until today. Life Care Centers of America operates more than 200 skilled nursing facilities in 28 states. But again, back to the culture, gradually, not just with Life Care, but with other companies too, that that feeling that nursing homes were just a warehouse, it gradually changed until today. Nursing centers are a vibrant place where people go to actually live and enjoy the last years of their lives through activities programs and socialization and learning opportunities that they have in facilities today. So that's the general way the culture has evolved. For life care, we've always been a culture based in the Judeo-Christian ethic, believing that there are three dimensions to man. There's the body and the mind, but there's also the spiritual aspect. And most doctors will say, and I've heard this in many seminars across the country, that if a person is spiritually healthy, has a faith in God, then treatment for the body and mind is much more possible, much more enabled because of that faith. And so, you know, we don't qualify people as to whether they're Christian or not when they're hired. We couldn't do that. But because we're a Christian-based company, we attract people who are Christians. And it makes a lot of difference in how we serve and how we treat people.
So establishing a quality place of care, establishing a home feel, creating an environment where the caregivers, you know, are as passionate about their work as those needing the care. And also realizing that, you know, families who trust long-term care facilities to take care of their family members, all of that works towards the good of the person who's living there. So what are some of the real needs that still exist? What are some of the needs of those folks who are in long-term care, and what can we do to help them?
Let me say, first of all, you mentioned a word that I think is very important, and that is trust. You know, any kind of health care facility or organization would say that the trust you have between the people who lead that facility and the family is critical. It definitely is in long-term care. Long-term care, a nursing home, is an emotional endeavor because it's hard for a family to think about putting a loved one in a nursing facility. It's emotional. And once that person is admitted to the facility, anything that happens, whether it's positive or negative, is emotional. Mm-hmm. That's their loved one. That's the important people in their lives. And so the ability for us to manage or at least connect to those emotions, I think, is crucial. But so having that trust relationship between the family, between the resident, and between the staff is very important. But the needs, and I mentioned this just a moment ago, the needs of people for socialization is critical. I suspect that you may have met Claude Ogle, who is one of the residents at Life Care Center Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Claude is 101 years old. He will be 102 on George Washington's birthday, February the 22nd.
Wow.
I mentioned Claude Ogle because Claude Ogle is an engaging individual. Even at his age, he's very sharp mentally. He's very outgoing personally. And he has told me that for months and months, he told his family, I need to go to Life Care Center. Please. No, you don't want to go to nursing center. His son's got, no, you don't want to do that. Yes, I do, he said. And so once he gets there, He's reacting to all the other residents, to the staff members who are delighted that he's there. He's become one of the best ambassadors for our facility you could ask for. And so that socialization that was important to him, he's transmitted that to the people around him, and he's just transformed the morale of that building and the way that the residents interact with one another and the families that come there. He's just a marvelous creature. So socialization is important. And, of course, the physical needs like food and exercise and whatever is prescribed by the doctor for that person's condition, whatever it may be in a long-term care facility, that's critical as well. But then the activities, I suppose the grand old game of nursing facilities is bingo.
Bingo,
now,
yes.
Now, you know, those of us who are have not had the experience of being in a nursing center, but we think, well, but bingo, is that a very... Listen, that's a very important game in a nursing center. I mean, those residents, they want to know exactly when it's going to, what time it's going to be, and they're usually there early for it, and they brag about how they win or complain that they don't win. So it's just a... But that's an activity. But having buses that can take them to concerts or shopping trips or visits to the doctor they need to go, or just on a sightseeing trip, those activities are really special. And that's how they get to enjoy the latter years of their lives.
I like to show up occasionally in one of those bingo games, because I've never really won a game, but I like the prize package, you know, right. Reese cups, Baby Ruths. I mean, you know, just whatever you can imagine in the way of candy, good, wholesome candy, if candy is wholesome for those residents. It's pretty exciting.
But sure. More than the gifts, it's the bragging rights.
The bragging rights. I've seen a couple places, I think, where maybe some of the residents have the capability of even playing two boards, you know. And yeah. So it's kind of fun, kind of interesting. So, and you would have heard earlier on our podcast, our students talking about their joy of getting to play bingo with some of the residents in those facilities. You mentioned a moment ago, you know, life care as well as many other long-term care facilities that we are aware of, many of them based in, you know, Christian principles. What is a biblical mandate? You're in the industry now. This is a, you know, obviously a business for you guys, but it's a business of care and compassion. So what's a real biblical mandate as to why and how do we care for the elderly?
The Bible is very clear about how we ought to treat the elderly. Here are a few key verses. 1 Timothy 5 and 8. But if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Leviticus 19:32. You shall stand up before the gray head and honor the face of an old man, and you shall fear your God. I am Lord. James 1:27. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their affliction and to keep oneself unstained from the world. You know, our Lord taught us that we need to interact in a positive way and serve other people, but there's a strong mandate that I just read here about treating and ministering to the orphans and the widows, because they were the people who didn't have anybody to advocate for them in Jesus' time. And it's still true in a real sense today. And then Psalms 71:9, do not cast me off in time of old age. Forsake me not when my strength is spent. So the Bible tells us we need to recognize and honor those people who have reached their senior years. And I think one of the tragedies that I see in our nursing facilities, William, is that sometimes, many times, people who find themselves in a nursing home feel that they've been put on a shelf, that society's passed them by. They don't have any contribution to make anymore to society. When actually the opposite of that is true. You think about the wisdom and the experiences that people in those age categories have acquired as they've lived their lives, the things they've been able to succeed in and the things that they've failed in, the lessons they've learned in failure. And we learn a lot of things in the failure.
Right. Life.
And so they can offer a lot to people. If we just allow them to do it.
Our friend Ron Hill was at Lee recently, and he talked a little bit about, you know, learning from your past. And he made the statement. He said, you know, to his past, thank you. To his future, I'm ready. You know, let me go forward now. Let me move forward. Speaking of the past, Beecher, you have been with us in this journey that we call Deke Day at Lee University since we first launched this program. Now, for those of you who might be listening, you don't really understand how I can get by with calling Beecher old. He really knows that I'm not dogging on him for age. It's actually a term of endearment for he and I, because of the people that will listen to my dreams most often. Every time I've ever called you, even one time I think you were either getting on a plane or getting off of a plane. You may have even been on the plane and you answered my phone call. And I've pitched a lot of dreams to you. And this one worked, that we call Deke Day. And you have been around with this with us from the beginning, where our Lee students go out on their very first weekend at Lee and do service in the community. Can you speak a little bit about that and what you have seen progress since 2003 to now, when, you know, Life Care is one of our standard partners and you guys have invested in this in many ways with us? What do you see about this relationship and this interaction between the young and the elderly?
Well, when you first told me about that, I thought, this is too good to be true. Here, the freshmen coming into Lee University are going to spread out and visit the nursing centers in this area, and it wasn't even our idea. And all we were asked to do was to help provide transportation for that. So I thought, what a deal this is. Yeah. And, you know, everything that you envisioned with that, William, has come to pass. I mean, I talk to some of the students who've been in these nursing centers, and I hear the excitement they had. I think some of them, and they've expressed that to me, some of them were not too excited about going to a nursing home, mm-hmm. but they were going to do what was expected of them, and they did, but they came out of that with a different perspective on what nursing centers were like. And they talked about a particular resident or two and what they enjoyed doing with that person, what that person said to them, and they just had a great day. But for us, beginning with that vision, we've seen things happen at Lee that may or may not have been connected with Deke Day in its inception. I do think it was part of God's overall plan.
Sure.
But to see a long-term healthcare administration program begin at Lee University, it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that program, we've attracted some fine young people into our company who become excellent leaders. Let me just share some names, if I may.
Sure.
Abigail Holliday, she's our executive director at Life Care Center in Blount County, one of our premier facilities up mm-hmm. in Maryville, Tennessee. DJ Slivka at Old Hickory Village, the executive director over there in Nashville. Deanna Brinson, Life Care Center of Ooltewah, one of our finest buildings, a state-of-the-art building just down the road here from Cleveland. Ben Stiefel at Life Care Center of Collegedale, our executive director there. Juan Miranda at Life Care Center of Jefferson City. Joshua Lee, who's the assistant executive director at Life Care Center of Blount County. But all those people are around operating facilities that are very important to Life Care and the people they serve in this area. So you think of the benefit that we've received with that. And then, of course, the nursing program
mm-hmm.
that started 4 or 5 years ago, I guess, mm-hmm. and is now producing people that we desperately need in our nursing centers. People who come out of Lee University in those two programs that understand and want to be involved in careers in a company that has a Judeo-Christian ethic. And it's such a marvelous thing for us. But then in individual centers, I've asked executive directors in our facilities to talk about what Deke Day's meant to them, and I have glowing reports from them about it.
Good deal. So we don't think it's going to go away. As long as Lee exists and as long as people need care, we're going to continue doing this consistent care level.
And as long as we can continue to encourage that.
Exactly. So we appreciate that. And it's a win-win, you know. My sons are now grown, and they went with me in the early days, just ride-alongs as we would go into these facilities. And all three of my boys have also experienced, back when they were in college, this whole idea of a Deke Day exchange. And so it does have a bit of full circle, Beecher. It has a way of kind of coming all the way around and helping us be reminded on a consistent basis. And that's one of the things that I really appreciate about this Adopt a Grandparent, is that these students are going beyond that one day a year episodic kind of in and out experience. So what difference are you seeing in residents when the same familiar volunteer face shows up on a consistent basis?
Oh, they become like one of their family. I mean, it's true. Residents are eager for that person to come back and to have that fellowship with that individual and to hear about that young person, young man or young woman's dreams and maybe offer any counsel that they can to them as they go. And they talk for days after that visit. After each visit, they talk about that with other people. So it's incredible how just a simple idea, and it is a simple idea, visiting other people in a nursing center and the impact it can make. People don't understand how lonely sometimes people can be in a nursing center, especially people who don't have a family who comes to see them. And yeah, our staff can substitute and in many ways become the families of people who live in a nursing center, but they see them every day and they know that they're paid to do their job, although a lot of our staff go way beyond their job responsibilities in serving residents. But to have these people come from the outside in a volunteer kind of way to come and spend time with them is precious.
Beecher, what would you say to students that are listening today that have you know, some may enter this career field, some will not, and that's perfectly fine. But with regard to their youthful age and their need to respond in, you know, being a compassionate caregiver to someone else, what encouraging words after being around with a little bit more white hair than I have would you say to these folks about ways in which, and the value and the importance of the youth interacting with the elderly and challenge them, if you will?
Well, the Adopt a Grandparent program is a great program because, first of all, the relationship they establish with the elderly person, but it also teaches them the beauty and the value of volunteerism, which is something that will follow them the rest of their lives. And as you said, whether they get into a healthcare career or not, they can understand how critical it is to be involved in serving people. You know, we just had Martin Luther King Day, and Martin Luther King, one of his quotes was, "Anybody can be great because anybody can serve."
Mm-hmm.
And so look for those opportunities for service. And there's a world of opportunity available in long-term care.
Thank you, Beecher. Tyler, this is continually a, maybe not a frustration, but something that I wish there was a way to change, that our listeners would be able to be in the room with us when we have these interviews. Just to be in that dynamic where people are challenged as they dialogue with each other, but also reminded that, and I say this all the time, you know, we're made for more, but you're still young. You haven't reached in the gray hair stage that I'm beginning to enter.
Got a few,
or our friend Beecher. But, you know, tell me, Tyler, what does all this mean to you as a young man still with a lot of opportunity to influence people? What's happening right now?
Well, I think if I had to sum these up, I think, like you were saying at the beginning of this episode, you said that the work that they're doing, it's not easy because you have to deal with a lot of emotions as you get emotionally invested in people. But I think, I mean, it's simple. I mean, obviously, if you're going to go work in one of Mr. Hunter's life care centers, you're going to need a certain level of training. But with the work that adoptive grandparents doing, like, what they're asking you to do is to be human, to be there, to be present. I mean, to be present for those who may at times be forgotten about. And so while I agree with you, and yes, like the emotional engagement that it takes for these students and for these professionals in this field, it's by no means easy, but it's simple. And I think it's simple because what it's doing is it's calling us to be human at its very basis and to affirm that that humanity in others. So.
You know, we try in these closing moments of every episode to challenge our listeners to do something to continue to make a difference in someone else's life. And going back briefly to what Beecher said, you know, he said there's an opportunity in long-term care. Sure. From the business side, plenty of opportunities to advance the care level of excellence that's given to people. But from the practical side, there's always an opportunity for you and I and anyone else that wants to make an investment in somebody's life. And so I will, you know, often end our episodes with this comment and this phrase, you know, we're made for more. There seems to always be an opportunity in front of us that we can make an investment in someone else's life. And I don't know where you are today as you listen to this, and I don't know what challenges you're facing, and perhaps you may think you don't have anything to offer. I think you probably do. Somehow it might need to be uncovered, and you might need to find that. Or maybe you think, you know, man, I don't have any extra time. Well, I know a lot of busy people who find time. And so I don't want to make you feel bad about any of that. I want to encourage you. Somebody is probably waiting on you to make an impact in their life. And so we just simply want to challenge you from ServeCast to do that very thing. So today, rather than me, you know, giving another message of sorts, I want to take a moment and we'll pause. And now if you're driving down the road listening to this, don't pause. Continue driving safely. But listen for a moment. Our friend Beecher prayed a prayer before we left his office, and I think it's fitting for this moment to say to our Creator to help us to find those footprints in which you lay for us every day so that our steps can be ordered in making a difference in someone's life.
Father, thank you for your love and grace you show in our lives moment by moment of every day. And Lord, you created us with a purpose, a plan in mind that you had for every individual. And Lord, I just pray that for people who are listening, that they'll, if they've not already identified or if they've not understood what your plan is for them, that they'll earnestly seek to know what it is, because that's what you desire. And there is no greater peace, no greater comfort, no greater inner satisfaction than knowing that we are in the center of your will for us. And Father, you not only created us, but you gave us different gifts to be able to accomplish your purpose. And maybe there are people listening who don't really understand what those spiritual gifts may be. And I would encourage, Father, that they would pray and earnestly seek the Holy Spirit to lead them to understand those gifts and then to perfect those gifts in service to you. So, Father, I would pray that if there's anybody listening who really does not know you as personal Lord and Savior, that they could come to the place in their lives where they can honestly, with heartfelt dialogue with you, say, Lord, I recognize that I'm a sinner in need of your grace. And Father, would you just come in and change my life? I want to surrender my life to you. Come and be the Lord of my life, Father, and guide me into that abundant living that you promised in your word. And if anybody will pray that prayer, Lord, you've promised to be faithful and become part of your kingdom and really take on the role that you've created them for of impacting other people. I know, Father, that your grand plan is for every person created to know you and to serve you and then to share your goodness and your grace with other people. So, Father, I pray that you would allow that to happen. And I thank you, Father, for the Adopt a Grandparent program and Deke Day at Lee that encourages and sets young people on the course of volunteerism and service and impacting lives in such meaningful ways. I pray all of that, Father, in the name of your Son. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Servcast. The thoughts and opinions expressed on Servcast are those of William Lamb, Tyler Shores, their guests, and no one else. Until next time, this is Servcast, signing off from Studio 22.